Santan woke in confusion, not sure what was happening to her, not even certain where she was, imagining for the first few seconds that she was back in her chamber at Mortomme and that Anna was standing beside her bed. Then she became aware of the coarse grass and the hard earth beneath her and the smell of the rawhide that covered her, and immediately following that the pain came again. It was as though a claw had closed on her lower body, a cruel taloned claw, cramping and crushing her, and she cried out involuntarily and doubled over, clutching her stomach. With a pain, reality rushed back upon her. Her mind was clear and sharp after the hallucinations of the previous day. She knew that was happening. She knew instinctively that the immersion in the heated waters of the pool and the drugged smoke she had breathed must have precipitated it. "Honey," she called, and the old woman materialized out of the grey half-light. "It has begun." Hani helped her to her feet, then gathered up the hemp's box skin. "Come," she whispered. "We must go where we can be alone." Hani must have already chosen the place, for she led Santen directly to a hollow a short way beyond the camp, but screened from it by the Mongongo grove. She spread the hemp's box skin at the base of a large Mongongo tree and settled Santen upon it. She knelt over her and removed her ragged canvas skirt. Then, with quick, strong fingers, she made a brief but thorough examination and then rocked back on her heels. "Soon, Nam child. Very soon now," she smiled happily, but Santan's reply choked off as another spasm caught her. "Ah, the child is impatient," Honey nodded. The spasm passed and Santan lay and panted, but she had barely caught her breath before she stiffened again. "Oh, Honey, hold my hand, please, please." Something burst deep within Santan's body and hot liquid poured from her and sprayed down her legs. "Close, very close now," Honey assured her, and Santan gave a little hunted cry. "Now," Honey pulled her into a sitting position, but she slumped back. "It's coming, Honey. Get up," Honey snapped at her. "You must help it now. Get up. You cannot help the baby if you lie on your back." She forced Santan into a squatting position with her feet and knees splayed apart, the natural position for voiding. "Hold the tree to steady yourself," she instructed her urgently. "There!" She guided Santan's hands onto the rough bark, and Santan moaned and pressed her forehead hard against the trunk. "Now!" Hani knelt behind her and encircled Santan's body with her thin, wiry arms. "Oh, Hani!" Santan's cry rose sharply. "Yes, I will help you push him out." And she tightened her grip as Santan bore down instinctively. "Push, Nam child! Hard! Hard! Push!" Hani entreated her as she felt the girl's stomach muscles bunch up and harden into bands of iron. There was a great blockade within her, and Santan clung to the tree and strained and moaned, and then she felt the obstruction move a little, then jam hard again. "Hani!" she cried, and the thin arms locked around her, and the old woman moaned with her as they strained together. Hani's naked body was pressed to Santan's arched back, and she felt strength flowing out of the old, wizened flesh like an electrical current. "Again, Nam child," Hani grunted in her ear. "He is close, so close. Now, Nam child, push hard." Santan bore down with all her strength and will. Her jaws were clenched so that she thought her teeth would crack, and her eyes swelled in their sockets. Then she felt something tear, a stinging, burning pain, but despite the pain she found strength for another rigorous convulsion. It moved again, then there was a rush, a release, and something enormous and impossibly heavy slid out of her, and at the same moment Honey's hand reached under her buttocks to guide and welcome and protect. Like a benediction, the pain wilted away and left her shaking as though in high fever and running with her own sweat, but empty, blessedly empty, as though her viscera had been drawn out of her. Hani released her grip and Santan clutched at the tree trunk for support and drew long, ragged breaths. Then she felt something hot and wet and slippery squirming between her feet, and she pushed herself warily away from the tree trunk and looked down. A tangle of fleshy, glistening tubes still dangled out of her, and joined to them, enmeshed in their coils, the infant lay in a pool of blood-speckled fluid on the chemsbok skin mat. It was small. She was surprised at how small. But its limbs were stretching in spasmodic clutching and kicking gestures. The face was turned away from her, but the small, neat head was covered with dense cap of sodden black curls plastered to the skull. Hani's hands reached down between her legs from behind and lifted the baby out of her sight. Santen felt a devastating sense of deprivation, but she was too weak to protest. She felt a gentle twitching and tugging on the umbilical cord as Hani handled the child, and then suddenly there was a furious squalling howl. It struck Santen to the heart. Then Hani's laughter joined in chorus with the angry bull's. Santen had never heard a sound of such unequivocal joy.
"Oh, listen to him, Nam child, he roars like a lion cub."
Santen waddled around awkwardly, hampered by the fleshy ropes dangling from her own body and still linking her to the infant. He was struggling in Hani's hands, all wet and defiant, his face red with anger and his bee-stung eyes tight closed, but his toothless pink mouth wide as he howled his outrage.
"A boy, Hani," Santan panted wildly. "Oh, yes," Hani laughed. "By all means, a boy."
And with the tip of her forefinger, she tickled his tiny penis. It stuck out stiffly as though to endorse his anger, and at Hani's touch released a powerful arcing jet of urine.
"Look, look," Hani choked with laughter. "He pisses on the welt. Bear witness, all the spirits of this place. A veritable lion cub has been birthed this day."
She offered the squirming red-faced infant to Santan.
"Clean his eyes and nose," she ordered,
and like a mother cat, Santan did not need further instruction. She licked the mucus from the tiny swollen eyelids, from his nostrils and mouth. Then Hani took the child, handling him with familiar expertise, and she tied off the umbilical cord with the soft white inner bark threads of the mangongo tree, before severing it with a quick slash of her bone knife. Then she rolled the end of the tube in the medicinal leaves of the wild quince and bound it in place with a rawhide strip around the middle. Sitting on the soiled chemsbok skin in a puddle of her own blood and amniotic fluids, Santen watched her work with shining eyes.
"Now," Hani nodded with vast self-satisfaction, "he is ready for the breast," and she placed him in Santan's lap.
He and Santen needed only the barest introduction. Hani squeezed Santan's nipple and touched the milk-wet tip to the infant's lips, and he fastened on it like a leech with a noisy rhythmic suction. For a few moments Santen was startled by the sudden sharp sympathetic contractions of her womb as the child suckled, but this was lost and forgotten in the wonder and mystery of examining her incredible accomplishment. Gently she unfolded his fist and marvelled at the perfection of each tiny pink finger, at the pearly nails, each no bigger than the grain of rice. And when he suddenly seized her finger in the surprisingly powerful grip, he squeezed her heart as well. She stroked his damp, dark hair, and as it dried it sprang up into ringlets, in order to see the pulsing movement under the thin membrane that covered the opening of his skull. He stopped suckling and lay quiescent in her arms, so she could take him from her breast and examine his face. He was smiling. Apart from the puffy eyelids, his features were well-formed, not squashed and rubbery like those of other newborn infants she had seen. His brow was broad and deep, and his nose was large. She thought of Michael. No, it was more arrogant than Michael's nose. And then she remembered General Sean Courtney.
"That's it," she chuckled aloud. "The true Courtney nose."
The infant stiffened and broke wind simultaneously, both fore and aft. A trickle of her milk dribbled from the corner of his mouth, and instantly he began to hunt for the nipple again, mouthing demandingly, rolling his head from side to side.
Santan changed him to her other arm and guided her nipple into his open mouth. Kneeling in front of her, Hani was working between Santan's knees. Santan winced and bit her lip as the afterbirth came free, and Hani wrapped it in the leaves of the elephant ear plant, tied it with bark, and scampered away into the grove with the bundle. When she returned, the child was asleep in Santan's lap, with his legs splayed and his belly tight as a balloon. "If you permit, I will fetch Oa," Hani suggested. "He will have heard the birth cries." "Oh yes, fetch him quickly." Santan had forgotten the old man, and now was delighted at the opportunity to exhibit her marvellous acquisition. Oa came shyly and squatted a little way off, showing the usual masculine lack of temerity when faced with the feminine mystery of birth. "Approach, old grandfather," Santan encouraged him, and he shuffled closer on his haunches and peered solemnly at the sleeping child. "What do you think?" Santan asked. "Will he be a hunter, as skillful and brave a hunter as Oa?" Oa made the little clicking sound reserved for those rare occasions when he was at a loss for words, and his face was a web of convoluted wrinkles like that of a worried Pekingese lapdog. Suddenly the child kicked out strongly and yelped in his sleep, and the old man dissolved into uncontrolled giggles. "I never thought I would see it again," he wheezed, and gingerly reached out and took a tiny pink foot in his hand. The child kicked again, and it was too much for Oa. He sprang up and began to dance, shuffling and stamping, circling the mother and child on the chemsbok skin. Around and around he went, and Hani controlled herself for three circuits. Then she too leaped to her feet and danced with her husband. She followed him with her hands on his hips, leaping when he leaped, twitching her protruding backside, performing the intricate stamp and double shuffle, and singing the chorus to Owa's praise song. "His arrows will fly to the stars, and when men speak his name, it will be heard as far." And Hani came in with the chorus. "And he will find good water. Wherever he travels, he will find good water." Oa squeaked and jerked his legs and made his shoulders shake. "His bright eye will pick out the game when other men are blind. Effortlessly, he will follow the spoor over rocky ground, and he will find good water. At every campsite, he will find good water. Prettiest maidens will smile and tiptoe to his campfire in the night." And Hani reiterated in her reedy sing-song, "And he will find good water. Wherever he goes, he will find good water." They were blessing the child, wishing upon him all the treasures of the San people, and Santan felt that her heart would break with love for them and for the small pink bundle in her lap. When at last the old people could dance and sing no more, they knelt in front of Santan. "As the great-grandparents of the child, we would like to give him a name," Hani explained shyly. "Is it permitted?" "Speak, old grandmother, speak, old grandfather." Hani looked at her husband, and he nodded encouragement. "We would name the child Shasa." Tears prickled Santan's eyelids as she realized the great honor. They were naming him after the most precious life-sustaining element in the San universe. Shasa. Good water. Santan blinked back the tears and smiled at them. "I name this child Michelle Shasa Ditiri Courtney," she said softly, and each of the old people reached out in turn and touched his eyes and mouth in blessing.